Okay, let's do it.
Welcome to the monthly podcast. This is Referee's World.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Referee's World podcast. My name is Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee with the Somerset FA. My partner is PGMOL assessor and Somerset FA training officer, Rich Mellin. It does sound a little echoey today. That's because we're recording this in my kitchen, because we're in between studios, I think it's fair to say. But it's not too bad, is it?
No, it's not too bad, and the tea is nice.
I was going to say, we've got cups of tea on hand as well.
This is Referee's World.
Right, let's continue. We're going to discuss pre-match briefs.
Yes, we are going to touch on pre-match briefs. We're going to cover pre-match briefs, you as referee, with two neutral assistant referees, and also we're going to cover areas you as referee with club assistant referees, which is interesting discussion, Darren.
Yeah, I think this is an area that I personally have been working on. Like many others, I'm going from a level 4 this season. When you're used to using club linesmen, I always find it a bit nerve-wracking to start with, because it's like, whoa, hang on a minute, I've got proper guys here with me now. So it kind of adds to the feeling of the game. It makes it feel like a bigger game in a weird way.
Of course it is. Well, let me see if I can change the focus slightly here with a comment that Supply League football, players are paid in some cases to play at that level. So if I talk about the local Western League in our particular region, I know there are clubs that have a budget for the players. And it's not just about turning up and playing subs. So the approach for referees has got to be better. The approach as regards going to a game as a team has got to be better. And your preparation has got to be thorough. So that's really the areas we're going to touch on. And, you know, there may be slight variations within the pre-match, and I'm sure there will be with some cases, because there are some experienced colleagues listening to this. But, like I say, what we hope to do is give some guidance to those guys that are stepping up to the plate, perhaps for the first time or in their first season as a level 4 referee.
Let me just quickly go through my pre-match. I've got 10 points here, Rich.
Keep it to 10 points.
Right, okay.
But when your pre-match is out there on the day, will it be 10 points? Yeah. And how long will it last, Darren? Is there any point in expressing comments about a previous game that you had in your current pre-match brief?
I don't think so, no, because every game's different.
Okay, so how long would you expect your pre-match brief to last?
About 10 minutes, 10 to 12 minutes.
Yeah, that's fair. That's about right. Any longer than that, I would just ask you to consider, what are you actually including in your pre-match brief? Yeah. Of course, there will be questions from your colleagues, because some of your colleagues may be relatively newly qualified referees in their first season, perhaps, running the Supply League line. But, you know, that's the challenge for you as referee, to make sure the team gels with an understanding of what you're looking for as the team leader.
Okay, this is what I would go with. Firstly, I would sort of welcome the guys, discuss who's going to be senior and junior, explain that I would take right wings and left backs, same side, both half. Substitutions, I would say, keep them tidy, halfway line please, one on, one off. When they go on, do the boot check and the jewellery again, even though you've done it prior to going out onto the field of play. That way it kind of makes things look professional. It makes it look like we are actually doing our job, even though the chances are they know that it's already been done, but it just looks the part, doesn't it? Before kickoff, check all the equipment, as I've already mentioned, all the jewellery off, respect handshake and stuff, check the nets, both halves, and then come to the centre, witness the toss. Senior will take a full match record, please. Junior to take the goals. Goal kicks, I would ask all of them to be checked. That's just my own personal preference. I think what that does is it makes it look like you're actually keeping on top of things all the way through. And let's say, for example, and we will talk about it, on a cold day, if all the players at the opposite end of the pitch, you want to keep yourself fairly warm to a certain degree.
I have a little bit of a theory about that, Darren, about checking all goal kicks, because I also think it aids work rate. It helps the positional sense and the work rate of your colleague running up and down the line. Whereas a colleague that may wish to check sort of every other one or one in three goal kicks, it's intending to be a little bit lazy. That's my opinion. That's a personal opinion and nothing else than that. So, you know, I would say check every goal kick. I don't disagree with those that want to do one in two. But I'd like to see everyone checked. And it does create the impression of a good work rate by the assistant referee.
And I think, just moving on from that, when you're running back to get in position, just obviously good signals, just a bit of eye contact, everything's fine, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I often, when I'm on the line, I'll often give a thumbs up to the referee as I'm running back a bit. And then when I get to the 18-yard box, I didn't say that, I said the penalty area, didn't I?
You can say 18
yard. All right, when I get to the 18
yard box. You can say 18 yard box. I have to say penalty area as county trainer.
Or when I get to the 18 yard line, I'd always recommend that the assistant looks back just to check to make sure keeper hasn't moved it. Again, it just gives that impression that you're on top of everything.
Yeah. Creating awareness of the assistant referee. At one point I wanted to take up very, very early now, Darren. You've talked about thumbs up to the assistant referee. Why?
I've been asked to do all the time, really. Just a quick sort of, everything's fine.
Okay, your pals, you've made your acquaintances, you've had a cup of tea before the game, you're now out live on a game of football. Why do you need to turn around and give a thumbs up to the assistant referee and say, thanks for doing that? Because that's basically what you're doing. It's part of his job to do that. It's part of the job to monitor goal kick restarts.
I think it's not a case of saying thank you. It's a case of just checking, your way of checking that everything's fine and no problems with the keeper and it's all...
Okay, let's go to another area then. Right, if you're trying to check that everything is fine, have you got buzzer flags?
Me personally, no.
Okay, right. For those colleagues who haven't got buzzer flags, brief eye contact, necessary. Thumbs up, probably not necessary. But my point would be, taking your eyes off players in a heated game is probably not the best policy to adopt. So don't be over fussy about giving a thumbs up to the assistant referee, especially if the assistant referee isn't even looking. Where's the point then? But the other thing is I want to say is, with the buzzer flags, if an assistant referee wasn't happy with the placement of the ball and the goalkeeper's not listening to him, I would suggest that he uses the buzzer to alert you or to make you become aware that the ball is not placed correctly for a goal kick. So consequently, you don't take your eyes off the players. That's what I'm trying to encourage.
Right, okay. So moving on to throw-ins, again, I would say plenty of eye contact here.
Eye contact is crucial.
With this one.
Eye contact is crucial. Eye contact, not just for throw-ins is crucial, but for many other things as well. How do you divide the field of play between you and the assistant referee? What's your preference, Darren?
Pretty much the usual, the thirds. So in the defensive third, I'll go with the assistant pretty much all the way.
Okay.
I would also encourage the assistant to give me some kind of signal as to which direction it will go in, generally which hand the flag's in.
You're asking him to lead?
Yeah.
Like you would lead with subtle gestures, you're asking the assistant referee to lead
in
with
his
the flag
third.
Led from his legs.
Yeah,
okay. Thirds. Thirds is not a bad thing. Halves is not a bad thing. So which works effectively for you is the most important thing. So defensive thirds, you're looking for the assistant referee to lead 99% of the time. What is your pre-match instruction if there's a deflection that you have seen from the ball coming out of centre field and goes out for a throw-in and the assistant referee hasn't picked it up? How do you get your message across the way that you want the throw-in to be restarted? You have got to be leading.
So hang on, so
eye contact is crucial here. Now, every time that the assistant referee is going to put that flag up, you really want him to be looking at you.
Yeah.
Whether or not you look back at him is not important, but he has to look at you for any necessary lead. You may have your hands full, so consequently, it sounds sort of minor point that the assistant referee looks at you, and if so long as you've got a little pointer out from the side, using your fingers, using your leading arm, across the body, anything like that. If he picks up on that, at least he's got a lead from you. And you don't have to make eye contact with him, but he has to make sure he knows where you are. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So, that's defensive thirds. How do you deal with it? How do you lead? And what are you setting up in your pre-match? What about the other two thirds then, Darren?
Okay, the middle third, the grey area. This is where, obviously, the differences of opinion.
This is where credibility is tested.
Yeah.
If you haven't got credibility or you lack credibility when you're giving directional signals in this area, it will highlight hesitancy, incompetency, and teamwork goes down the path.
I think there's an area where, and this is something that you have picked up on games that I've done, particularly during pre-season, is don't need to signal for every single throw-in.
As a referee, you don't. If it's obvious, why do you need to signal for every throw-in? If it's a tough game and you're working furiously hard, why do you signal for obvious goal kicks, corner kicks and throw-ins? Perhaps you should signal for every corner kick, maybe, but not necessarily every goal kick and throw-in. That's what the assistant referee is there to do.
Yeah.
As regards the corner kick signal, that's a little bit more subtle. The assistant referee, if it's obvious, doesn't necessarily have to put the flag up, but directly indicate towards the corner quadrant from closest to him. So, what are you thinking in the middle third or the grey area?
Well, the grey area then, bearing that in mind, I would say to my assistant, if it's blatantly obvious, I will leave it to you. If it's one of those throw-ins that we're unsure about, then just give me a shaky head as though you're not quite sure, and then I will pick it up and give the decision the way that I felt that it went.
Okay. You, as the team leader, referee, must be the only person that takes a guess. If you've got to guess, and that's not a good word necessarily, but if you've got to guess, you should be the person that does it, not your assistant referee. If the assistant referee doesn't know which way the directional signal is, he should keep the flag down. He or she should keep the flag down. And you will take, as team leader, you will make that decision. Now, your competency levels improve and increase as time goes on. So consequently, you have less problems in those grey areas, but when the time comes that you have to make a decision, it has to be the referee that makes that decision in that grey area, especially when you're in front of the technical areas. The technical areas are very, very touchy when you get things wrong or when somebody in the team gets things wrong. And if you're your assistant referee is in front of the technical area, it's highly important that teamwork is seen to be crisp and concise and very decisive. Okay, so in that area, just in summary, you must lead. You must be positive. Don't allow your assistant referee to guess. If anybody guesses, you, the referee, will have to make an honest guess. It has to be honest. Yeah.
And then in the final third, then the way I would do it is I would take the lead prior to giving the direction of the throw-in. I will just do the old hand signal on my tummy, you know.
Across the body.
Across the body.
Out from the side, yeah, that sort of thing, if there's need for a lead.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, Darren. In your third, it is you leading. For those that may be sort of, say, 50-50 or 60-40 type challenges. But all I want to say to referees is, when you're refereeing in your quarter and the ball goes out of play, there is no need to look back at the assistant referee to make sure he's putting the flag up. He has to look at you for lead and guidance. There's no need for you to look back. Taking your eyes off the game, you never know what you might miss. Looking back at the assistant referee 60 yards down the line looks as though you might not even know whose throwing it is. Now, if that's the case, and then the assistant referee puts the flag up, what does that look like? From 60 yards away, the assistant referee is making a judgment of whose throwing it is with no indication from you. So in your quarter, you have to lead. Eye contact is not crucial from you, but awareness and eye contact from the assistant referee towards you is important because you have to lead as the referee.
Okay, moving on to corners now. I would always ask my assistants to stay on the flag as opposed to coming in. That's my own personal preference.
Yeah, I tend to go along with that, Darren, and many, many times it's been used by numerous, hundreds, thousands of colleagues. But just sometimes, for psychological reasons, if it's a bit of a Fausty game, it might be pertinent to be seen to invite the assistant referee in 10 yards. For a psychological reason of watching the back post or watching the near post, if that's going to be the case. It's not something that we strongly recommend, but it's something you might want to use for a little bit of kidology and psychologically make the players aware that the assistant referee is watching from another angle for infringements. Reducing the proximity to play adds credibility, but too close to play, as we know, can give problems as well. So, you know, how far do you bring him in? Yeah, be fairly flexible, but don't. I wouldn't suggest go past 10 yards.
Next up then, I'd move on to fouls. Again, we split it into thirds, and I would pretty much go down the same route with the fouls as I would with the throw-ins. Is that fair to say?
Thirds. For fouls. I wouldn't be too keen on that, Darren. Let me say to you, in your quarter is what the general description is when the referee is talking to assistant referees. In your quarter, when it's credible for you to indicate infringements, I would like to have your support, please.
Yeah.
If on quick breaks, you as referee are caught out, you would ask the assistant referee to referee right across the field of play. Sometimes assistant referees want too much action, and it's gauging level of performance to match the mood and demands of the game. Now, what we do ask is assistant referees buy into the tolerance displayed by the referee and expressed by the referee in his game plan. Mm-hmm. So, I wouldn't go into thirds necessarily. I would break it down into quarters. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, Darren, you as referee, I'm now displaying Darren on a piece of paper how that breaks down. Credibility towards any distance from the touchline towards the edge of the goal area that's parallel to the assistant referee has got some credibility for that assistant referee to be involved. The further it goes beyond that, you've got to think about the proximity to play and decision making from there. Where, who is best placed, and who's got best angles. It's 90% of the time it's got to be the referee with optimum angle to make the judgments. The assistant referee is an assistant referee. The assistant referee should not be insistent. Okay, so little areas there to think about as regards to things. The further away it is from the assistant referee, the less they will be, they should be involved and encouraged to be involved. Unless they see a blatant handball that is missed by the referee because it might be on his blind side. Mm-hmm. And if I talk about an assistant referee in front of the technical area, he may see the right back that's out on out towards his touchline, 60 yards, 40 yards down the field of play, and you may be inside a field of play and miss the detection of a handball by him. But the assistant referee in front of the technical area, everybody can see it. It would be credible, I suggest, for the assistant referee to become involved. But got to be careful where it might be. It has to be obvious. It can't be. The assistant referee cannot be the only person that sees an infringement. It's not credible.
Okay, next up then, we've done the fouls. Offsides, what I would suggest, offsides are yours at all times. Give yourself time. Wait for the ball to land, preferably, before getting your flag up. Make sure it's right, unless, of course, you're in a situation where the striker could go one-on-one and collide with the keeper. If it's a blatant one, then get it up straight away to prevent that collision. And if it looks like it's going to go out for a throw-in, let it go out for the throw-in.
You're talking about the wait-and-see technique here, Darren, and I know colleagues listening understand what the wait-and-see technique is. Now, offside. Offside is a very, very difficult law to apply with the amount of football that's played and the varying levels of expectation. The wait-and-see technique is much more understood and accurately applied by our colleagues on the national list and the select group. So what I would say to our colleagues that are listening is not necessarily to identically follow what they see select group and Football League boys apply, because it's at your level that you've got to be able to sell it. You know, and if you start refereeing as though you're on the Premiership, you'll lose appreciation of your role. So try to tailor it as regards, you're right in what you're saying as regards when they play it, when they are actively involved, but try not to get too technical. Try to meet what players expect and what the demands of the game are.
When you say about being technical, are you talking now about this whole first phase, second phase of play? Because that's another area which obviously comes into play a lot more the further up, the higher up the leagues you
absolutely
go.
Absolutely right. You're absolutely on the right ball, right part of the game there. The first phase, second phase, third phase are very, very technical areas in which to get involved in. How can you sell it? How do you sell it? You've got irate players having given a technical offside and disallowed a goal. Now, I can't.
That's the grey area. That's the reason why I mentioned
real,
it.
That's a real difficult area in which to explain without giving a physical demonstration or seeing a video to say what is and what isn't. But when you're at grassroots, it is probably easier and right to give an offside rather than a dodgy goal. You give a dodgy goal, players will never forget you, and or forgive you even. But you give a dodgy offside, it's quickly forgotten and on we go. So just think about the level of involvement and not trying to be too technical and copy what our colleagues correctly do on the select group. They are very, very efficient referees at that level and assistant referees. And as referees progress through the system, they will interpret offside slightly differently and much, much more accurately as they go up the ladder. Does that make a little bit of understanding? Yeah, so it's a very, very delicate area offside, and I ask colleagues not to take any risks.
So, at what level, as a referee, would you start to introduce that level of technicality?
You, as a level four, would start experiencing it, but not to the extent of what Football League boys apply. So, when you become a level three referee, being an assistant on the national conference, that's probably where it will start turning for you as regards expectation. It's easy to put the flag up for offside as a level four. It's probably expected, and less technical involvement. But as you become a level three and then move upwards, that's when you are actually challenged and people's expectation and interpretation change as well.
Next up, I would go with mass confrontation. I would suggest, obviously, keep your eyes open, step onto the field of play just to sort of try and get relatively close to where it's all kicking off. Just monitor the runners, the ones that will run 25 yards to put a boot in and then run off again.
How do you delegate what happens at mass confrontation to your colleagues?
Well, I would say to the guys, me as the referee, I'll get the two culprits to start it.
Okay. I want to put a scenario to you here, Darren. You've got an incident 25 yards in centre towards the penalty area, and the assistant referee on the bench side is the closest to the incident as of the two assistant referees. The other assistant referee is 60, 70 yards away on the other side of the field of play. How do you delegate those two guys to carry out a particular observation involving mass confrontation? Let me lead you here then, Darren, and give a suggestion.
Yeah.
The closest assistant referee, providing the benches are not kicking off, will immediately come onto the field of play. Okay, come onto the field of play not to get involved in the melee, and you shouldn't be as involved in the melee as referee, but to adopt one of the three-pronged attack when you're looking at mass confrontation. The assistant referee will take one observation point, you will take one observation point, and the furthest assistant referee will come onto the field of play to gain an observation point as well. The closest assistant referee will monitor the two that started it as well as you. It's important to have identity of the two that started it if you've got sanctions to apply.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily good practice if you identify number two and number 11 as the two involved, but you've got one of them wrong by number shirt, and it wasn't number 11, but it was, say, number 10. And the assistant referee doesn't have that information, and then it goes to, you know, problem areas for you as regards maybe sending off later in the game if they're not sent off on that occasion.
Okay.
So ask the closest assistant referee to monitor the two that started it to help you identify those that are involved. And then the assistant referee that has to travel the furthest, he's got the widest peripheral view whereby he can see any runners. The runners are sometimes
a keeper.
Yeah.
Defender.
And a defender who may run 40, 50 yards to get involved. So his peripheral view is much wider than the guy that's here.
Right.
See what I'm thinking? Mm-hmm. And see what happens for you?
Yep.
So consequently, it's delegation of responsibilities at mass confrontation, which is important. And obviously, observation. You ask one assistant referee to note the runners and one assistant referee to note those that instigated it. And any extras that they can pick up. Mass confrontation is very, very difficult to monitor.
There are referees that will get in between them and try to play.
Let me suggest the referees that get in between are going to be the referees that miss other incidents involved. If you've got two yellows for the two that you're splitting up, but you've missed a red, you've lost out and you've not done the game a service.
Okay, at what point in a mass confrontation would you abandon the game?
That's a very good question. I've never come across that experience.
I have.
Oh, come on then.
I've done one.
Let's have this.
I did one. This was a game in the Gloucestershire FA that I was affiliated to at the time. And the keeper had a run-in with the forward. They were niggling quite a lot through the game. Eventually, the striker, I had to send him off for a second yellow. Then the keeper, who he'd been niggling at with, I sent him off for a second yellow. The keeper then walked straight over to where the striker was on the side of the pitch and started laying into him. Okay, with that, both teams all went in and started getting involved. So there was 22 blokes on the pitch pretty much at it. So I then called the managers who were running over at that point. I said, go in and sort them out. They couldn't do anything, so they stepped back. And I think there was about 17 minutes left of the game, and none of us could do anything about it, and it just went on and on. So I just blew and abandoned it and let it end.
Okay, Dad, fair comment. A couple of things that I want to just pick up on them. You talked about the game being what was your word? Niggly. Did you say niggly? Why did you let things get niggly? Let's talk about.
This is very early on.
We're going off at a tangent here.
Yeah.
How many half fouls did you let go before you decided to penalise?
There must have been a lot because that's obviously why. So,
okay.
So what you're saying is it's all my fault then? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, okay, fair point.
Your words, not mine.
It was very early in my refereeing career.
Okay, let's see if we can map something out here. As a referee, do you take out a game plan with you?
Oh, I do now, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, what's a general game plan for you? What are you normally trying to do?
Okay, I'll check the teams first in terms of where they are in the table, the history between them, weather conditions, goals, also things like...
When you say goals, what do you mean goals?
Goals scored, goals conceded, that kind of stuff.
You're looking at probably where their strengths and weaknesses are, aren't you? That's a good ploy to take. Look at a team, look how they set themselves up. Well, you know, it's not easy to identify a tactical formation, and I can guarantee you tactical formations are applicable at every level of football. It may be different as regards ability, of course, but... Even down to Tottenham District, Division 6, on a Saturday afternoon, they do have a tactic. Mm. It might be an up-and-under tactic, or it may be a 4-4-2, you know, and try to pass through the midfield. But have a game plan with you. What do you normally take with you as regards your game plan? Have you got an idea of how you want the game to go in the first 10, 15 minutes? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you go into a derby game, straight away you're switched on in terms of, right, OK, it's going to be quite pacey. I've got to monitor my own tolerance level. I've got to know straight away, nip the half fouls in the bud, that kind of thing.
Yeah, set it up. Let the players know what you will accept and what you won't accept. Some games you will be able to play advantage fairly early, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 minutes into the game if it's a nice, easy momentum game and not a moody game. Mm. If it's got history behind the game, if players have moved clubs... And you may think, Rovers versus City locally, you know, they're two nice clubs, they're well-known clubs. But if they brought in new players, have those players brought a history and a bit of baggage with them? Have they had an altercation with that player that they played against last year when he was playing for another team? Mm-hmm. So you can see, whilst the reputation of the teams might be good, individual players might bring problems with them. So consequently, you need to sort of establish control as early as possible. But we are going off at a tangent here.
Okay, moving on then. Penalties. What I would suggest, there's three things that will happen. I'll either cut the grass and say, no way. I'll either give it, or I'll be looking across at my assistant. Have you seen anything? Because I'm not entirely sure. And then, obviously, keep lots of eye contact.
Do you want to talk about that experience at Minehead versus Wellington pre-season? Do you want to recap that?
Yeah. Ah, yeah, that was it, yeah. That's right, there was a lack of eye contact. I didn't give the penalty.
You didn't give the penalty, but what did you do or what didn't you do?
I didn't communicate with Martin.
In what way would you have communicated?
I should have looked as if to say, was that a penalty or was it not?
So?
And I didn't. I blatantly, straight away, cut the grass.
You cut the grass and didn't look at him?
Yeah.
Did you have any doubt at the time?
At the time, I thought, no way, because it just looked, from where I was going, it looked to me.
Okay, interesting. Maybe you were right then, but where I am, where I was watching from, with 120-odd spectators, we all swore that it was a penalty kick. And the expectation was...
And my assistant at the end of the game said...
And then when we spoke to Martin afterwards, he said, yes, it was a penalty kick from where I was. And he's the closest assistant referee with a totally different angle to you.
Yeah.
So the perception is... Or not the perception is, but the fact is, were you blocked by a player running across your line of vision?
No, I don't think I was. I was running towards it and I had a clear path.
Were you behind the tackler? Did you have a good angle?
I was coming at it at a 45-degree angle.
Would you say you had a good angle?
No.
Okay.
Looking at it.
So, if you know now that you didn't have a good angle to make a judgment... What is your pre-match, if you can recognise that situation, what is your pre-match to your assistant referee when you have that slight problem that's coming up towards you?
I will wait a bit, I will look over at my assistant and wait to see whether or not that assistant gives anything. And if they shake their head, then I'll go with what I thought.
But you never invited the assistant in to make a decision, did you?
No.
You cut him out straight away?
Yeah.
So... Okay, there is a process in which to follow up, isn't there?
Yeah.
Just label it for me again.
Cut the grass.
And you'll say no?
Yeah. I'll either give it.
If you're in doubt?
If I'm in doubt, then I'll look across at the assistant and I'll wait and see what signal I get from the assistant. And if they say I don't know, I will give what I think is right at the time.
You don't give what you think, give what you know.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I give what I know.
No hesitation. Yeah. No hesitation. Be a positive. We're positive here. Positive refereeing.
Give what I know. And I'm just coming up to the two last points here, which makes it 12 points. One of them is don't let me restart against Law, which I think does what it says on the tin.
Okay.
The other one would be with regards to the benches. Now, this can obviously be...
A volatile area.
I've actually written down here, benches, your call, unless you've had enough, then call me over, which is not the right approach, is it? Because we've discussed this prior to coming on air.
We've discussed this. Yeah. Okay. If you give the assistant referee license to, under your description that it's your call, how do you know that they're going to take control of the benches and protect the image of the game? It's about protecting the image and taking control of situations. The most difficult areas at times will be the technical areas. And so consequently, a proactive approach right at the beginning of the game, does the assistant referee go up there and introduce himself, hey guys, need any substitutions, come through me please. If physio, if you need to go onto the field of play, wait for the referee signal or go through me, but please, let's work together and I'm sure we'll have an enjoyable afternoon. Start proceedings off as though you want to work with them. Don't leave everything until a reaction is necessary or comes out of something. Waiting for a reaction may not be the best policy, and I wouldn't follow that myself. So consequently, the assistant referee based in front of the technical area is under pressure. He's got a lot of monkeys on his back, for the want of a cliche. And any players or any technical area occupants listening to this, I don't really mean that you're a monkey, honestly. But you know what I mean.
And that's what I've got down in my pre-match. And I think I have to say, that's probably the longest pre-match I've ever done.
Let me say to you, do you ask the assistant referee on the bench side to say, right, give them a warning, second occasion, I will come over. Mm. Is that what it is? Is it two strikes
much,
and out?
Yeah.
Two strikes and out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But what is a tolerance level? Let me say to you, offensive language is probably the biggest piece of cancer that comes from a technical area. So, a manager who's effing and blinding the top of his voice at his players for missing an open goal. What's the recommendation from a referee to the assistant referee? Would you expect him to control it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the referee would need, particularly if a referee can hear it on the field of play as well, I think the referee should be seen to at least make a comment, particularly at parks levels, particularly at the lower leagues, the grassroots stuff, make some kind of gesture to suggest the swearing, keep it down, please.
I'm afraid that all you need to do is say, hey, from 50 yards away, if the referee hears it, he can turn around to the bench and say, excuse me, gentlemen, that is not acceptable. Yeah. If I do hear a repeat, I will take proper action and dismiss somebody.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a strike. Now, at what time do you decide the line has been broken and they've overset the mark and you need to take action? Okay, do you get one strike and does the assistant referee get one strike? Or when the assistant referee has to get involved 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes later, his is the second strike. Do you follow what I'm
saying? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't get one strike each. They get two strikes accumulated and that's it. Once they've overstepped the mark, hopefully you can see where we want to try and take this. And it's just keeping the game tidy. Mm-hmm. But think about how proactively your assistant referees could work with the benches. And do you change your assistant referees at halftime to
no.
the opposite? So you do actually keep them on bench side. What's the decision? What would be behind your decision if you wanted to change the assistant referee to the other side at halftime?
If I felt that the referee was in control of what was going on.
The assistant referee?
Yeah, the assistant referee, sorry. Was it in control of what was going on? If I felt that things were getting a bit rowdy on the bench, and if I could see from, say, 50 yards away that the assistant wasn't controlling it properly.
Let me say to you, there's reasons that you might change the assistant referee away from the technical area and protect him a little bit.
Mm.
Protect him, but you're also protecting the occupants of the technical area. If he's been involved in a penalty kick that they don't agree with, but it is a penalty kick and a goal was scored, then try to protect him and not let him have 90 minutes of grief on that touchline. Also, what if he's involved in an offside decision that gave a goal or disallowed a goal, and in their opinion, the assistant referee was totally, blatantly wrong, but you have confidence in what that assistant referee delivered and think he was correct? you can protect your assistant referee by taking them away from the occupants of the technical area and put them away far over the other side. You can't change decisions for him because he will then be facing the technical area. I appreciate that, but at least you're allowing him to refocus.
There's a bit of
confrontation. Yeah, because occupancy of the technical area can certainly distract an assistant referee and put him off his game and gain all sorts of advantage. But, you know, there are circumstances when you would change an assistant referee and, you know, if there have been problems, then, you know, protect the game, protect the players, protect the occupants of the technical area and protect your colleagues.
The download is complete.